Chapter 10 Pike woke to the sounds of shouts and thudding Bargalil hooves, and Ansel saying his name over and over while shaking his shoulder with unmistakable urgency.
Yeah, right. Okay, what's happening?
I think our hosts are under attack from other Bargs, said Ansel. Can't see much from the window. Just some big shapes dashing around beyond that fire pit. What's really worrying is the comms. Tried calling the others and got nothing but static.
That made Pike sit up. Jamming! The only light in the hut came from a small iron brazier, the dull orange glow of embers. Ansel's vague form nodded in the gloom.
Seems likely, which means someone out there has much better tech than these Bargalil farmers.
Someone like the new owners of this planet, you mean?
Pike said, swinging his legs out of the big, padded cradle that was the Bargalil equivalent of a bed. Tugging on his field jacket, he went over to the small slit-like window and peered out at the forest clearing just as Kref came into view, leading Punjo and Mojag around the fire pit. Even as Pike whispered sharply to Ansel, a battle-stripe-daubed Bargalil warrior burst through a bushy wall of vegetation, brandishing a spear in either hand. In the next instant, it saw the three off-worlders, let out a blaring roar, and charged. This was a very different Bargalil to the ones they had encountered last night, peaceful villagers who were friendly and welcoming to footsore travellers, despite the upheaval that was afflicting their world. Like Punjo and Mojag, Kref was armed, but as the Bargalil warrior bore down on them, the Henkayan knocked the extended spear arm aside and launched a devastating punch at the creature's head. It had the desired effect. The Bargalil's legs gave way and it crashed to the ground, limbs akimbo. Ansel was already at the open door as the others dashed across the remaining distance, closing and barring it after they were safely inside.
Captain, what is going on?
Gasped Mojag.
Huh? Even I know that one,
Kref said.
Somebody's trying to kill us.
Where are the others? Said Pike. Dervla and Wynn's hut wasn't far from yours. Did you see them?
We tried calling them and you on the comm, Mojag said. But all we heard was hissing.
The window of our hut faced away from theirs, said Punjo. But the walls are only made of rushes and mud, so I made a hole to get a view. I saw several Bargalil bodies lying on the ground, and someone firing from the hut window.
Weapon discharges, said Pike, looking at Ansel. Could that be detected?
Could be,
Ansel said.
Chief, we've got to go get them.
Picking up anything on your fact tab?
It's not been on,
Ansel said, digging into his backpack.
Trying to conserve the battery. Right. Passive detection is showing a comm frequency jammer about 20 clicks to the northwest, and several telemetry sources, airborne, moving south in overlapping search patterns.
Heading our way, said Pike.
Be here in about 7 minutes.
The two men shared a grim look for a moment, and Pike gave a sharp nod before turning to the others.
You three be ready to leave when we return, he said. If we're not back in 6 minutes, make a run for the forest and keep moving south for half an hour.
I wish we'd never asked the Bargalil for shelter,
Mojag muttered.
And if wishes made a difference, I'd be carrying a phased plasma rifle now.
He crossed to the door and glanced at Ansel. Ready?
I better be.
Pike yanked open the door and dashed out with Ansel hot on his heels, but they were just skirting the fire pit when he heard a shout from Ansel and felt a hand grab his upper arm.
Wait, they're already here.
Ansel had slowed and was staring at data on his factab. Pike dragged him into the lee of a low firewood shelter.
I thought they were minutes away, he said.
Ansel shook his head. Another craft, a bigger one, swept in from the west. And it's practically sitting on top of their hut.
He gave a wordless snarl and prodded the factab display.
They must have tracked the energy weapon discharges. Perhaps, if we charge in, surprise them.
Pike felt the same impulse, but his responsibilities forced caution and survival upon him.
Can't do it, Ansel. If we end up dead, how can that help Wynne and Dervla?
So we just leave them behind, Bran? Is that what you're saying?
Pike grabbed a handful of Ansel's jacket shoulder and pulled him closer.
I am not about to go up against whatever's over there in the darkness, but if you want to run on in and get yourself shot, fried or disintegrated, or all three, be my guest. I'm going back to collect the others and head for the forest, then maybe we can figure out what to do next.
He let go of Ansel, turned and ran lightly back the way he had come. The hut's door was already open, revealing Mojag's puzzled features. Pausing only to give a summary of the new danger, he got all three of them outside and dashing towards the shadowy forest. Ansel was there too, clutching his factab to his chest as he stumbled after them. Away from the clearing, night closed in. Their harness lamps sent wavering beams into the dank gloom angled down at the forest floor. The ground was damp and uneven, the undergrowth tangly, and often home to peculiar insects that made tiny warbling sounds. When disturbed, their emissions resembled quiet, eerie choirs. The ground also sloped upwards as they moved south. After about 20 minutes, they reached a clearing with a cluster of mossy rocks and boulders, where Pike decided to call a halt. As they settled down to rest, Pike got them to dim their lamps to conserve power cells, and the anxiety on every face grew indistinct. Harness rations were produced, sampled, swapped, chewed, and water pouches were sparingly sipped from.
"Ansel," Pike said eventually, "those survey units still in the area?"
"They switched their sweep away to the west," said Ansel,
features pale grey in the muted radiance of the factab.
"That other big craft has dropped off the scanner as well."
Not meeting Pike's gaze, he bowed his head.
"If I went to active scanning, I could get more detail. But then those hunters might detect the factab signal, and it would drain the cells too."
Pike nodded somberly as he got to his feet.
"Right then. See if I can't find out some facts," he said. "Me and Cref will head back to the Bark village for a scout around."
"I'm going too,"
Ansel said as he stood up. "You most certainly are not. You get to stay with the others and keep an eye on that screen. Any sign of bandits nearby, you up sticks and go deeper into the forest." Ansel glared at him, but sat down heavily.
"Find Wim for me, chief. Find something. I have to know."
And from the inky shadows outside the halo of their clustered harness lamps, a voice spoke.
"I believe that I can tell you all you need to know."
Hands reached for holstered weapons as eyes turned in the direction of the voice. Just a couple of soft glowing points winked on a short distance away. One was fixed to the shoulder of a tall figure approaching through the trees, the other to the same side wrist. Even before the face resolved itself out of the gloom, Pike knew that it was the thief and murderer Khor. And an awful certainty took hold when he saw a confident smile on that hated visage. Several weapons were levelled at Khor by the time he came to a halt at the edge of the clearing, empty hands held out.
"I'll come to the point, Captain. I have the two females."
Pike's grin was cold. "And I should believe you because..." Khor nodded.
"Proof, then."
He touched something in his ear and muttered a few indistinct words. There was only the breeze-stirred silence of the forest for several seconds. Then a faint hum grew in the air, and when Pike looked up, he saw a craft, some kind of open-top anti-grav lighter, descending to the clearing. It slowed and stopped just above head height. Above it, several dim forms shifted about. Then a light came on, revealing Dervla and Wynne, hands bound, both looking dishevelled and harassed, with three of Khor's goons holding on to them.
"How you doing up there, Dervla?"
Pike said.
"Fine, Captain, fine. Wind's a little bracing, but our dance partners are a bit short on technique. Can't wait to teach them a few new moves. You just hold tight, darling. He looked back at Khor.
Well?
Captain, it comes down to this. There is a vital task to be undertaken, and you and your crew are perfect for the job.
Pike allowed himself a bleak smile. Now, there's the thing. Because we've already carried out a contract for you. Didn't work out too well for us, you might recall.
Circumstances change, Captain. For example, you are all now fugitives, trapped here among the shackled worlds of the War Cage, and you have lost your ship. Oh, I know that you rescued Gabrosan and Mav, and I would guess that his tool-bearer was the one who seized control of your vessel.
Well, we know about you, Pike countered. Mav told us who you take orders from.
Mav told you?
Khor let out a rasping laugh.
The man who stole your ship suddenly becomes a reliable source? Look, I could try to explain that unlike him, I want to actually defeat the Shuskar, which means no half measures. I could try and persuade you to understand why we had to remove the indecisive Mav from the situation by marooning him on that ruined planet. But really, all that matters, all that you need to keep in mind, is that I have your crew females, and that their lives depend on your cooperation.
Pike rubbed his jaw thoughtfully and glanced at the others. Only Ansel met his gaze, giving a resigned shrug. Damsels in distress, he thought. Ah, the joys of command.
All right, he said. Let's hear it.
Khor gave a wide smile.
Wise decision. Now, attend closely. The rule of the Shuskar.
Who?
Said Pike. Khor gave a soundless snarl.
The Shuskar, those who give the orders. Their rule lies heavily upon the worlds of the War Cage, but only the Hold Worlds enjoy the permanent presence of a Shuskar Lord Governor. One such is the planet Armag, a key industrial center, with its capital in Armag City. The native Gruxan are hierarchic, caste-conscious, and while their dynarch houses run Armag society on behalf of Lord Giamatu, the Shuskar governor, the underworkers tend to be less compliant. Your task is to infiltrate the Manse Tower, ascend its garden galleries and clerk chambers, get into the Pendatoria, then find Lord Giamatu and kill him. With gun or knife, it matters not.
Assassination, eh?
Pike folded his arms.
Serious business to entrust to a gang of smugglers from outside this war cage of yours.
Your escape from the doom we arranged for you and your crew proves your resourcefulness. But you need not worry about being cast adrift on an enigmatic world. We put our trust in the Gruxan rebels of the Armag sub-districts. They are working closely with the new Chainer leadership, and the addition of your crew will make the overthrow of the Lord Governor all the more certain.
Pike was regarding Khor closely, imagining whereabouts on that thick neck he would have to apply his hands and how much force he would have to apply.
Must say I like a good strong dose of sedition now and then, but I'm wondering about how our appearance might fit in or not, and then there's
the language barrier, Captain.
Khor reached inside his bulky armoured jacket and brought out a transparent square wallet containing a cluster of small pale objects.
These were retrieved from one of my guests, your deputy, the human female. Language teachers, fabricated, of course, by Gabrosan Mav's toolbearer. Cunning devices impress the patterns of the Omnilect upon the brain. I'm disappointed that you didn't make use of them earlier, but you will all take one before departing for Armag. As for your appearance, although Armag is a Gruxan world, the movement of workers around the war cage means that you will see a scattering of other races among the underworkers, and you will not be as eye-catching as you might think. You will be presented to the Gruxan rebels as new allies from the replacement worlds, while to anyone else you are merely drafty apprentices from the same.
That's some amount of planning, Pike said. All for us. Khor shook his head.
You and your crew are taking the place of another team which has been unavoidably delayed. But I have every confidence in you and your talents.
Compliments now.
No, Captain. Ultimately, it comes down to a matter of incentive.
Khor glanced up at the hovering lighter and gave a signal. One of the three captors raised a snub-nosed handgun and pressed it against Dervla's neck before she could react. There was a faint, sharp sound. Dervla let out a muffled cry. Then the process was repeated with Wynne, who glared and made no sound.
Idler rounds, said Khor. They are tiny but sophisticated pellets that travel through the body, homing in on the main valves of the heart. In 2.5 days, by your reckoning, the idlers will reach their targets and your friends will die. Luckily, the operation is scheduled for completion in less than 2 days, and as soon as confirmation of the death of the Lord Governor reaches us, the idlers will be removed, and your crew members will be safely returned to you.
Still staring up at the lighter, Pike could feel a maddened rage warring with caution, but the certainty of consequences was unavoidable. Eidlerones, that travel through the body. He reined in the anger as mutters and curses reached his ears. Turning, he saw similar emotions darkening the faces of the others, and Ansel slowly reaching for his sidearm. Pike gave a wordless shake of the head, and after a moment, the murderous look in Ansel's eyes faded a little, and his hand fell limply to his side. Pike faced Khor.
So, just taking hostages wasn't enough?
I want to be certain that your every thought and action is focused on carrying out the mission to the end, to the final blow.
Oh, we're focused all right. You can be sure of that.
Pike's thoughts were full of violent imaginings, smashing an elbow into that throat, a fist into that face. Instead, he spread his hands.
Let's waste no more time. Let's get on with this black business.
Khor had been muttered into a cuff communicator, and less than a minute later, a second lighter swept into the gloomy clearing. Small leaves were swept up in its A-grav helices as it descended. Access ramp already extended. Khor was first to hop up and inside, and before long Pike and his crew were aboard and aloft, speeding off into the darkness, closely followed by Dervla and Wynne in the first lighter. They were in the air for only a matter of minutes, during which Khor failed to order the pilot to deploy the canopy, so all had to endure the chilly buffeting of the slipstream. Pike felt the cold biting through his skin, but was resolute in maintaining a matter-of-fact demeanour in the face of this icy blast, especially whenever Khor glanced back at his passengers. To which Pike would flash a grin and a wink, just for the hell of it. But his private assessment of the situation was stark. In taking Wynne and Dervla hostage, Khor had cut his crew's combat effectiveness in half. Kref and Ansel were thoroughly at home with a variety of mayhem-dealing weapons, but Mojag and Punjo's skills lay elsewhere. He had considered asking that skag-bucket Khor to swap Mojag and Punjo for the women. But not only might Mojag and Punjo be less than appreciative at such a deal, they would almost certainly be less able to cope with captivity than Dervla and Wynne. So What with it being just a right crappy deal all round, Pike decided to stick with the hand he was dealt. Kor's ship was parked on a level, barren ridge overlooking dark, unbroken forest. Bay doors parted as they drew near, a broad fan of light in the murk. The leading lighter, with Dervla and Wynne, swung smoothly down towards the bright entrance and glided inside. But by the time the second had slowed and manoeuvred in beside the first, there was no sign of its occupants. As the lighter came to a halt, Pike got to his feet, ready to raise a protest, but was forestalled by Kor.
"They are safe," he said, "merely being confined to suitable quarters, for their own protection."
"And in the meantime?"
"You and your people can resume your seats."
Kor made a small gesture.
"In a few moments, we shall be underway. A short journey to the nearest monoportal, no more than a couple of hours."
"Monoportal," said Pike. Kor let out a dry chuckle.
"How to explain? Simply put, most of the worlds of the War Cage are linked together by a network of instant transfer portals. Most have one or two that still function, while worlds newly integrated with the War Cage start off with the full complement of four. The bridging point for one is not far from here."
He shook his head.
"On new worlds like this, the portals are only partially anchored, so we need to stabilize it before sending you on your journey."
Pike's mind raced on hearing this. "So, we step through one of these portals and we're on Armag?"
"Not so simple. Unauthorized portal travel is a capital offence, so portal snaggers are a cautious bunch, jealously guarding all their tiny secrets. Once we have stabilized the portal's anchor point, we can send a coded message through to the snagger gang on the other side, on a world called Kotahil. They'll be expecting our contact, and once you're through, they'll set up the next stage, taking you to Armag."
Pike, still standing, glanced at his crew and saw edgy mistrust in their faces.
"And when we have danced your little dance and done what you want," he said with undisguised bitterness, "how do we get our people back? Where do we meet? Not back here, I'm guessing."
"No, not here. Modulator teams will have secured the portal bridge by then. More likely somewhere on Kotahil, or on Armag, if we can be sure of our safety. And we'll do what we can to recover your ship."
Pike nodded as he regarded Kor, almost feeling as if he were seeing him for the first time. Apart from the details about the journey to Armag and what they had to do there, everything else he said felt like a lie. Everything. So Pike sat down on one side of the aisle-facing seats, rested his left leg across his right knee, and gave an easy smile.
"In a way, this reminds me of that time we had to collect a package from an antiquarian on Nightlanden on behalf of an anonymous client. Oh, the trust issues we had, and the never-ending ganshing over it all. But it all worked out in the end. So we'll just settle down and take a rest, get some of our energies back. I'm sure we'll be busying around soon enough."
As he made a show of relaxing, the others did too, reassuring evidence that they had got his message. Any mention of Night Lantern was code for life or death situation, play it very cool.
"How reasonable of you, Captain. I approve."
Kor paused as the bay doors closed to a chorus of machine actuations, followed by a series of muffled thuds.
"Seals are secure, so we shall be underway in a few moments. I leave you under the attentive custody of two of my most trusted guards. There is a food dispenser and a waste stall in the corner over there. My guards can demonstrate any operations as required."
With that, he clambered out of the lighter and strode along a narrow walkway to a hatch that slid shut behind him. Pike waited 3 seconds before sitting up and turning to face the others.
"What's the plan, Chief?" said Ansel. "Please tell me that you've got a plan."
Pike raised a finger to his lips as he regarded the others. Punjo the Agetsi was hunched into his seat, tall, bony frame almost crammed in on itself. He held his pouch of weave figurines in one hand, long fingers tracing their shapes through the material. Mojag sat in a seat towards the rear, tensely watching Pike, his features a mask of weariness, yet there was something sharp in his gaze, an echo of Oleg, perhaps. Pike knew that he had to find time for a private gab with Mojag, just to find out the state of his mind, or minds. Kref the Henkayan occupied a whole double seat, a stolid, formidable bulk, sitting there with arms folded, craggy features seemingly composed, but there was a perceptible furrow on that wide brow, and he wasn't saying much. Come to think of it, he hadn't said anything for hours. And here was Ansel, his face an open map to all the thoughts and feelings currently bouncing inside his head. Pike recognized them all in himself, the anger, the frustration, the hate, self-recrimination, all funneling into a burning need to act. But Pike was the captain, and he could not afford the luxury of acting on instinct. "This is my crew, mine, and I'll keep them alive no matter what."
"Sure, I got a plan," he said. "We endure. We lost the ship, and these gouging scumsuckers have our weapons, so we endure, we survive, and we wait for our moment."
Ansel looked at him.
"And this isn't it? Our moment doesn't happen before we and Dervla and Wynn end up worlds apart?"
Pike locked gazes with him, leaned forward, raised a finger, then pointed off to the side. "If you cast your gaze forward to the ceiling above the walkway, where our custodial goons are parked, you'll see what appears to be a pair of circular housings jutting slightly proud of the ceiling, which is probably semi-hollow strutted plastone. Remind you of anything?" Ansel gave a sideways glance, angry eyes taking in the details. Then his shoulders slumped.
"Armored turret recesses. Tell you, Chief, this core
is a lying, thieving murderer. Oh, yes, I can practically smell the kills he's made."
He gave them all a hooded look. "So, when I say we must endure, it is for a reason. Trust me. We'll survive. We'll watch each other's back, and we'll wait." And as he regarded Khor's brawny, slope-browed, body-armoured guards, he suddenly remembered the language teachers, those pills made by Hechek, Gabrozen Mav's tool-bearer. He took the little transparent pouch from his chest pocket, tipped one out onto his palm, and stared at it for a moment.
"We mustn't be the ignorant playthings of others."
Then, taking a deep breath, he swallowed it back. Ansel and the others were wide-eyed as he smiled and licked his lips.
"Tastes of absolutely nothing, lads. So here, share them around. I'm pretty sure they're not poisonous, but you can keep an eye on me just in case, or just take the damn things now. Up to you."
Hesitantly, suspiciously, one by one they followed suit, with only Punjo taking it with a little water from his waste bottle. After that, everyone tried to get comfortable enough to rest, if not actually drift off into sleep. At some point, Pike found himself fuzzily awake, muttering something in an unknown language, before lying back with eyes closed, dozing on and off, until a sharp tapping jolted him into full awareness. One of the guards, a scar-faced, bull-necked humanoid blessed with what looked like an ingrowing nose, grunted a few words that sounded like,
"Hey! Buntscum, boss is here,"
and gestured over his shoulder. Khor was standing on the dockside walkway, prodding and tapping a thin triangular datapad of some kind. Seconds later, the bay doors parted and began to open, admitting a grey, watery light. Khor then glanced down at Pike, lips halfway between sneer and smirk.
So, how is your facility with the Omnilect, Captain?
Khor had started the sentence in Anglic and halfway through switched to the alien language. Pike felt an odd delay in hearing the words and understanding them. He levered himself upright and caught sight of the dull grey of an overcast dawn beyond the bay doors. He scratched his head, combed back his hair.
Not too sure yet. I'll have to see how some traditional limericks come across in it.
I'm certain you'll find out in due course,
Khor said as he clambered down into the lighter, followed by three of his over-brawny guards.
It's time for you to leave this world.
Minutes later, Khor was guiding the craft out of the bay. On this occasion, the canopy was activated, unfolding in sections over the seating, its opacity shimmering into hard transparency. It shielded the interior from the squalls of gusting rain that battered the lighter from all directions as it swept away from the parked ship and out over a dense forest. Beyond the trees, Khor brought the craft down near the bank of a wide river. By now, he was taking readings from a blue hemispherical device sitting neatly in the palm of one hand. With the lighter now at rest on a pebbly strand, Khor rose and looked at Pike.
Not long now, Captain.
Part of the canopy concertinaed open, and Khor stepped out, followed by one of his pet goons carrying a large hiking pack of some kind. Pike gave a sideways glance at Ansel, who was leaning on the seat in front of him, his expression morose. A few minutes later, the two remaining guards stirred, gnarled hands raised to their earpieces, before beckoning the crew to disembark. Pike was first out, clambering down onto the strand, pebbles crunching underfoot as he shivered and drew his jerkin tighter against the cold breeze. Khor waved at him from over near the water's edge, about a dozen yards away. With the others at his back and the armed goons flanking them, Pike strolled over with as much swagger as he could muster. The bulky pack now sat splayed out on the pebbles, and Khor was standing over a tripodded device whose glowing panel he was poking with a thin stylo. There were also a couple of silvery poles sticking up from the water several paces out. As Pike drew near, faint, pencil-thin beams sprung out from the device, stuttering in a seemingly random fashion. But then blue outlines emerged from this activity, growing from the tops of the poles, curving over into an archway. As they watched, the view through the arch darkened and dissolved into blurry waves that pulsed towards its centre.
"Quickly, Captain," said Khor. "We can only maintain portal stability for another minute or so. Step through, and the Kotahil Snagger crew will be waiting to take you to the next stage in your journey."
"I really hope that proves to be true," Pike muttered, as he splashed past Khor and out into the shallows. Up close, the portal had no edges as such, instead a fuzzy outer boundary that circumscribed the murky nothingness. Pike glanced back at his crew, saw their nervous faces, gave his best devil-take-the-hindmost grin, and stepped into the pulsating gloom. And stumbled as his foot landed on a hard stone surface somewhat higher than the pebbly shore he'd just left. First impression was that he had emerged amid a cone of pearly radiance, surrounded by inky shadows and an atmosphere that was cold and damp. Before he could turn to see who was following, someone grabbed his arm and pulled him back from the quivering face of the portal.
"Out of the way! The incoming margin has to be vacant!"
Pike's manhandler was short and bundled up in tawny furs, topped by a hairy bearded face with intense eyes. In the background, a handful of similar fur-clad beings, who had to be the Snagger crew Khor mentioned, busied themselves with handheld devices with which they were scanning the portal, and Pike suddenly realised that he was in a cave with an uneven ceiling. He was about to utter a hearty greeting to all and sundry when his snagger guide stepped smartly around and was just in time to catch Ansel as he emerged from the portal and tripped on the exact same spot. Mojag made it through without mishap, as did Punjo, although he had to duck under the arch. Cref also ducked, and while his large leading foot found safe purchase, his trailing foot caught on something, causing him to swivel round, fall backwards, and land with a hefty thud that drove a wordless snarl of exasperation from his lips. Yet, when Pike helped him to his feet, the Henkayan gave forth only a grunt, and his craggy face looked dark and surly. Straightening, Pike turned to the fur-clad snagger he had spoken to first and said, "Profoundest apologies to you. We're usually a bit more coordinated than that. So, this is Kotahil, then?"
"This is a cave! A stinking, damp cave riddled with gigishi nests!"
The diminutive snagger let out a curse-sounding word and lashed out with his foot to stamp on something in the shadows.
"Hate the verminous infestors! My name's Feskavoy. Are you Pike?"
"That's me, all right. And that over there is..."
"Don't want to know names. Don't care. No time for it anyway. We're in a hurry to get out of here before any of the governor's padfangs come sniffing around."
Sure enough, the rest of the snaggers were hastily breaking down several wall-mounted U-shaped sensors along with the tripod device and stowing them away in blue leathery sacks which were slung over shoulders.
"Padfangs," said Ansel.
"That's right,"
Feskavoy said with a wicked leer.
"Four-footed death machines, all lean muscle, gleaming talons and rabid snouts that can't wait to bite your face off. So, less jabbering, more speed. Here."
Pike suddenly found himself holding armfuls of musty-smelling fur cloaks.
"Get these on, all of you, and be quick about it. We have to leave now."
Minutes later, the crew were lining up after the Kotahil snaggers, all enfolded in odour-heavy furs. Even Cref, who had one that was clearly two stitched together. A narrow passageway led out of the cave, its air growing colder with every step as they shuffled along in single file. A couple of their guides carried lamps, but these were dimmed as the passage widened out. Frost glittered on all rock surfaces. Freezing gusts brought in swirls of fine snow to be caught on cloak fur. Pike was first out, his throat chilled by the air. They were on a high mountain track, that much was certain, but heavy snow, mixed with mist, made it impossible to tell if there was a gentle slope just feet away or a plummeting drop into some abyss. Without pause or explanation, the snaggers strode vigorously onwards, descending the path which at times was no wider than an arm's length. After a few minutes, though, the path led to a slope scattered with heaps of ice-bearded boulders half buried in the wind-driven snow. Peering beyond the boulders, Pike got an impression of murky emptiness, a void. Then came a point when a greater blast of wind tore a fissure in the even greyness, and for a second, Pike was staring out across an immense gulf at a sheer black peak crowned by a dark citadel speckled with tiny window lights. Then a great curtain of snow swept in. The gap was gone, and freezing mist closed in, cutting visibility to only a few yards. The freezing wind rushed and moaned around them. Snow gathered on shoulders, stuck to bare faces and hands, leeching a deadly chill into the bone. No one felt like talking in the cold, muffling deadness. By now, their path was following the line of a ridge and had just begun to slope upwards when a high, wavering howl rose out of the unseen depths off to the side. Footsteps slowed, and widening eyes stared into the greyness as mouths puffed white clouds.
"Was that?" Pike began.
"Padfangs!"
Feskavoy said as he came back along the single file to speak with the rearmost snagger.
"Brekin, that sounded as if it might have come from Fulcrum 3. When did you last check the intrusion readings?"
Brekin, who was shorter even than Feskavoy, dug madly through his cloak pockets.
"Not since we left the cave. Here it is."
He yanked out a thing like a knuckle duster with an opaque flattened oval attached to its underside, nestling in his palm as he studied it.
Yes, right, it's... they've...
Feskevoy silenced him with an upraised hand.
What about Fulcrum 7?
Brekin stared at the device while thumbing several dimples along its edge. Pike peered over his shoulder, saw coil-esque symbols flicker and change.
Secure, unchanged, was the verdict.
Good! Then we have a change of plan, said Feskevoy.
That'll be Plan B then, said Pike,
to get us where we're going.
Feskevoy gave him a sharp look.
Yes, after a fashion.
Before Pike could quiz him further, the snagger leader started barking out orders, and moments later they were turned about and heading back along the snow-choked pathway. Feskevoy led them to a sidetrack Pike had missed seeing, and soon they were descending a steep path consisting of cracked and worn sections of stairway interspersed with stretches of gravel and loose scree. All of it was being buried by the ceaseless snow, though, and the footing was becoming uncertain. After going to Kref's aid 3 times and Punjo's 2, Pike was relieved when the slope flattened out. Under cover of the snow, he sidled forward and nudged Brekin's shoulder.
So, we'll be on our way to Armagh pretty soon then, eh?
Brekin rocked his head from side to side judiciously.
Well, it's Fulcrum 7, so you'll have to detour via your Goethe. Of course, you'll be in the hands of the Deadfire Stackers and they can be,
Cranky, said Feskevoy, who was suddenly nearby. You know, grumpy, short-tempered types.
Short-tempered, eh? Pike said.
Yes, but don't worry. The Deadfire mob will make sure you get to Armagh. Just don't expect polite conversation.
The chief snagger ended with a weak smile, then hurried off to resume leading them down the trail. And not long after, they reached a tall, dark crack in the face of the ridge cliff, and lamps were turned on as they passed from blanketing snow into stony darkness. A twisty tunnel led to a cave with a tilted floor marred with scrape marks and drilled holes. The Cotter Hill snaggers began setting up their equipment even before the last of Pike's crew, Kref, trudged into the cave. The Henkayan sat down heavily on the floor, and mini avalanches of accumulated snow spilt off his fur-clad bulk. Ansel sidled up to Pike.
What was Feskevoy saying about this detour? Something about them being cranky.
Ansel, look. They can be a squad of psycho grandmothers for all I care, or four-footed lizardmen addicted to Daliborker wine, or troglodytes with a woolly sock fetish. Don't care. Just as long as we get to Armagh City, do the job and get the girls back.
By now, the others were clustered close by, and Pike could see a change in their demeanour. More resolve, less despondency. Only Kref seemed as doleful as before, which Pike found dragged on his own mood.
Pike! Were you ready for you and your followers?
Feskevoy was standing once more at his tripod device, and a dark, pulsing portal was starting to form. The other snaggers were taking readings with small handheld probes, which they used to make remote adjustments to small fringed antennae dotted here and there.
I've signalled the Deadfire snaggers on your Gutra, Feskevoy went on. They replied, so are you ready?
We are,
Pike said, glancing at the others. Composed and unsmiling, Ansel gave a weary thumbs up.
I just hope they're ready for us.
Right, all of you line up in front of the portal, ordered Feskevoy. Quickly! The pre-interlock fields are starting to harmonise.
As the crew moved forward, the arched portal darkened to an inky gap in which glimmering ripples continually swirled into the centre. Ansel was first through, followed by Punjo and a trembling, sweating Mojag. Kref stepped forward and was about to duck under the arch when he looked round at Pike and said,
Chief.
He frowned, pursed his wide, thin lips, and with a kind of discontented insistence said,
I really miss my cabin.
Then, half-crouched, he pushed on through, shoulder first, while Pike stared at his vanishing form and shook his head. His cabin? So that's what's been eating him all this time. With a laugh, he waved at a bemused Feskavoy and with a long stride entered the portal. And came out in dazzling, blinding light. There was an incoherent, bellowing noise nearby, which he immediately knew was Kref. He was just raising his hand to shield his eyes when his arms were seized and a hood was thrust down over his head, plunging him into darkness. Panic and anger erupted in him, and he began to struggle, twist and kick. Someone ordered for him to be forced to his knees, and as his legs were kicked from under him, his face was pressed against some kind of mesh-covered pad inside the hood. It smelled sweet, pungent, and in the instant that he realised what it was, fluid began to seep out of the pad. Caught in mid-exertion, he couldn't help inhaling, and the seductive narcotic sweetness filled his head in seconds. The strength in his limbs drained away almost as quickly as the hot anger and the will to resist. His senses were swallowed up in a kind of soft numbness, and he lost grasp on the passage of time. Now and then he heard a voice shout out a declaration of some kind, to which several others answered with fervent cries. Lucid moments were interspersed with periods of sourceless hilarity, which usually provoked a slap on the head and led to another bout of helpless laughing. The lucid moments grew longer as the narcotic effect gradually subsided. He dazedly realised that his wrists were before him and joined by rope to someone in front. He could also make out the footsteps of someone behind him. From the air, the small, faraway sounds and the softness of the ground underfoot, he was sure that they were travelling in the open. Then that changed to uneven and muddy, then to hard and gritty. A few paces along, his shoulder was grabbed as a voice told him to stop. His wrists were yanked round to the right, and his captor said, "Stairs! Climb!" They were spiral stairs, which went on and on for a while, then ended abruptly when one foot encountered a flat stone surface rather than another step.
"Welcome, guests," said a flat, monotone male voice. "Do not speak. The speech of cinders is profane. I am Hedgegol, and I am the lowest and least of the sacred tenders of the Godflame. Visitors like yourselves are an increasingly rare occurrence, and once you have been sent on your way, we shall all have to undergo the purity ritual to eliminate the profane air you have expelled. Have patience."
Pike grimaced beneath the hood. How much more absurd can this get?
"The hoods you wear," Hedgegol went on, "prevent any instance of the worst profanity of all, the beholding of our appearance by the likes of you, the impious cinders of life. Likewise, they protect you from the transfixing beauty of our forms, a magnificence so unbearable that minds can become unhitched from their moorings. Yes. Any who catch so much as a glimpse of our manifest glory are condemned to a lustral fate."
All of which was intoned in a flat, vaguely nasal voice that Pike had started to find amusing, then funny, then ridiculously funny. By the end, it was a strain not to burst out laughing. Then he was grabbed from either side and frog-marched across the unseen stone floor.
"May this fleeting encounter with us, the numinous and elevated ones, guide you along the shining path of enlightenment."
Pike's escort brought him to a halt for a moment before he was shoved roughly from behind. He could feel the air change as he staggered forward a few paces, tripped and sprawled on wet grass. Now, openly laughing, he pulled off the hood with his bound hands, blinked in bright light for a moment, then pushed himself into a seated position.
"Hell and a half! This shoved us through another portal.
Nice to see that they're still sending live ones through from you, Guttra," said a voice off to the side.
Are they still calling themselves the Divine Deadfire Congregation?
It seems not, Pike said as he got to his feet. Apparently our erstwhile hosts were claiming to be the sacred tenders of the Godflame.
Not their first name change and won't be the last.
The speaker was a lanky man in brown leather armour, sitting on a boulder a few yards away, toying with a curved dagger as he studied the new arrivals. Pike was about to remark upon the risible element of their temporary captivity when a black-hooded figure staggered out of a familiar dark oval nearby and fell full length on the grassy slope. A bald man in light blue fatigues hurried over to help him up, removing the hood to reveal Mojag's dazed features. The portal was sighted in a clearing on a gentle hillside surrounded by tall spiral trees with blue-green foliage. The air was cool enough for late afternoon, and a low fractured sunlight twinkled through the leafy branches. Behind the sitting man, further upslope, others in a motley array of garment styles gathered around a near-dead campfire, while a trio stood over by a device on a tripod while pointing handheld devices at the portal.
They sounded mad, Pike said, thoroughly and completely out of their minds. Any further off the map and we might not be here. Their leader is a deranged Typhoian by the name of Bexok, the man said. Every few score days, he has a vision from the cosmic oneness telling him to change the name and rituals of his pathetic little sect. The craziness seems to have been escalating recently, however.
Pike laughed as he shook his head.
Ferskavoy told me that we might find them a bit cranky. Binding, hooding, and sedating transients oversteps normal security concerns to my mind. Anyway, thankfully they let you pass onwards. Ferskavoy's message said to expect someone called Pike. That you?
Just then, another hooded figure emerged from the portal, stumbled sideways, and slumped sideways to the ground. Pike nodded.
Captain Pike, actually. And this fine fellow is Ansel, my science officer.
Aided to his feet by a couple of the bald assistants, the newcomer's hood was pulled off, and Ansel blinked widely a few times, shook his head and said,
Yep, that's me. How did you know?
Boyo, I'd know that lithe and graceful agility anywhere.
The lanky armoured man sheathed the dagger, straightened from his seat on the boulder, and came over, hand extended.
I am Tloskin Ray. Core tells me that you and your compatriots will be the cutting edge of our rebellion.
Pike accepted the man's hand and they shook. Ray had a large hand, yet the grasp was firm, almost matching the effort Pike put into it without any attempt to make a dominant point.
Funny that. Core has not really told us enough, he said, deciding not to mention Core's two hostages. But I'm sure you can help us figure out the steps of the dance, eh?
Tloskin Ray gave him an appraising look.
We were told that you and your people are from outside the war cage, from a civilization in the local stellar region. You understand, I hope, that the rulers of the war cage, the Shuskar, are ruthless in their tyranny and cunning in their distorting ways. They invented the Grand Escalade as a way to divert the energies of the peoples of our worlds and to set us against each other. We are the Chainers. Long ago, our forebears took the symbol of our oppression and made it into the name of our community and our defiance. For generations, we have been fighting the Shuskar, and over that time, they have grown steadily weaker to the point where we are sure that a concerted rebellion can topple them. Here on Armag is where the first blow will be struck. And with the industrial abilities of Armag City, further rebellions can be seeded all around the war cage. Core has been of great help to us. So when he told us about you, we decided to trust his judgment.
Ray smiled.
We'll be leaving here soon, decamping to a waysite where we cached arms and stores ahead of this meeting.
Do you have a change of clothing in your stores as well, do you think?
Chief, said Ansel. Where's Poncho?
By now, Mojag and Kref and Ansel were clearly present. But the Agetzi was not to be seen.
He has to be here, Pike said. Maybe he wandered off.
Ansel shook his head slowly.
Those portal techs say that only four of us came through. They insist that no one matching Punjo's height arrived. But I thought he might have been displaced or dumped nearby.
His voice trailed away. Pike ran a hand through his hair, grabbed a clump of it, and clenched his teeth. The last time he saw the Agetzi was just before the departure from Kotahil at the Fulcrum 7 portal, which meant... "We have to go back," he began. But even as he spoke, the portal arch wavered, blinked, and vanished.
"I'm sorry," said Throskin Ray. "Anyone who violates Bexok's demented rules doesn't make it. I've seen this before, and trust me, no plea for mercy has ever resulted in the release of one of his captives. Threats are pointless, because all they need to do is shut down the portal at their end."
Ray shook his head.
"But someday, justice will be exercised upon them."
By now, the rest of Ray's people had finished striking camp, and a few were heading down towards the trees in ones and twos, hefting sacks and shoulder packs.
"There is nothing to be done," Tloskin Ray went on, "except for us to leave the place before any Slaywing patrols pass overhead."
The remaining members of the Scarabus's crew looked at Pike, who found that he had nothing to say, who knew that no words could console them. But he also knew that saying something was his job. Any lie, no matter how comforting, would be an affront to Punjo's memory, so a kind of truth would have to do.
"Now listen to me, all of you," he began. "We're going to carry out this cursed mission, then get Dervla and Wynne and the Scarabus back. Then we're going to find those mad bastard vermin wherever they are, and if Punjo isn't alive, I'll show them the meaning of pain."
With that, he turned and strode downhill a few paces. He stopped, half-turned and looked back, face grim and unyielding. He stood there watching them, waiting until Ansel shrugged, said something to Mojag and Kref. Then all three followed. Pike met Ansel's gaze, nodded, and continued downwards.
"Some fine posing there, Bran boy," he thought, "and a stirring manly speech. Hell, I bet you even believe some of it yourself."